Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Walk with me around back here in the outdoor living hour of Rosie on the House. We've got a special broadcast lined up for you today. Mr. Greg Peterson of the Urban Farm is here. We're getting ready to start talking rain harvesting. Rosie and I are sitting in the amphitheater at the Fort Tut Hill in Flagstaff, Arizona for the Get Outdoors Expo. Just a beautiful venue. I need to watch the, like, get a concert listing. How nice of a place would this be to watch live music?
It would be. It would be very nice.
A nice little country band.
You get to see a live lumberjack presentation if you come up today.
Along with a lot of other things.
Yes.
If you want to introduce your kids to the outdoors, this is the time and place for you to do it. It's exit, if you're coming from up I-17, it's the 89 exit.
Yep, right at the airport.
Turn in it. Follow the signs of the park. Now, it's a little confusing when you pull in because you've got signs to the rodeo. You've got signs to the gun show. And then you got to come all the way around
just
to the amphitheater.
Keep on coming.
Come around to the amphitheater. All the way at the end is the Outdoor Expo. And the vendors are setting up now. We've got National Park Service just put up a booth right here next to us. We have, you walked up there.
Arizona Trail Organization is here, about the Arizona Trail. It takes you from basically Page to Eastern Nogales. Then you've got National Wild Turkey Federation. Then you've got Arizona Game and Fish present. You've got all kind of off-road vehicles. You have a boat dealer down here in the back parking lot. Now, I don't know who it is, but there's a couple really beautiful boats back there that I kind of stuck my head in last night. And then they just landed a huge helicopter back here that they're going to actually allow you to get in and look around for the search and rescue team. So it's cool.
I'm taking a tour of that on my way out of here, I'll tell you that. But we are, this hour, the Outdoor Living Hour, again, Greg Peterson, if you want to talk rain harvesting, if you have questions on rain harvesting, if you have questions on best practices, where to get started, we're covering all those things. Get on the line now at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. You can text questions into 411-923. Or you can email pictures to info@rosieonthehouse.com. Mr. Peterson.
Hello, hello. It sounds like I want to be up there. It's going to be, what, 138 degrees down here in Phoenix today?
That's like that feel-like indicator.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Feels like hot.
Yeah. You know what? I've been here 50 years this summer, and it seems like it gets hotter every year. Is it really getting hotter, or is my brain snapped because of the heat?
I'm suspicious. We got here in 65.
Uh-huh.
I think the heat is coming later. I think our springs are nicer, but it seems like it lasts longer.
Yeah.
You know, it isn't till Halloween before things start
cooling
back
down.
Off.
Oh yeah, no kidding. No kidding. So,
but this does bring the monsoons, and the monsoons are prime time for capturing rain harvesting.
Yeah. So actually today I want to just jump in and tell you we're actually talking about rainwater harvesting, gray water harvesting, and really other kinds of water harvesting that you can do. So I put it under the category of wickedly smart water harvesting.
Wickedly smart.
Wickedly smart. Because we live in a desert. We have to make sure that, because I get this question all the time, actually. People say, well, why should I bother harvesting rainwater in the desert? We don't get that much, and that's exactly the point.
That's all the more reason to do it.
All the more reason to do it. And so today I've got an outline for you to start thinking about how to get your rainwater and graywater harvesting set up and done.
Now, let's start with gray water definition. Everyone can understand rainwater, I would think. But people may not be familiar with the term gray water yet.
Yeah, gray water is any water that goes down any drain of your house except your toilet and your kitchen sink. And that's per Arizona Department of Environmental Quality.
That's black water. That goes to the septic or the sewers.
Exactly. That's black water. So it is legal in the state of Arizona, in every single city in the state of Arizona, to use your gray water in your landscape.
And why wouldn't you?
Exactly, because 80% of the water that goes down your drains at your house is gray water.
And what does water use it wisely say? Something like 80% of your water consumption is outdoors, so
yep,
just direct it right outdoors.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and what I've done here at the Urban Farm is I've actually transferred some of my services. So I have a kitchen sink. It's not really a kitchen sink, but I have an outdoor kitchen sink and an outdoor shower. And that water goes directly in the into the landscape.
And, you know, there's something really nice about an outdoor shower when it's 118 degrees. Because you don't, when you feel that dirty and sticky and gross, the last thing you want to do is go inside your clean, cool home and feel all dirty in there. So rinse off outside,
there
move
you go.
On to the inside.
And have the water be able to water your landscape.
So gray water, it's something, I don't know, I think I probably first heard about it 10 or so years ago.
Well, I'll tell you this, and Greg could probably correct me, but it hasn't been that long that it's been legal to use. I think Pima County and Tucson initiated it maybe 20 years ago, but Maricopa County and Phoenix was very slow to adopt it.
Yeah, well, and thanks to Brad Lancaster, he actually wrote the book on desert water harvesting, and it's one of the books we're going to talk about today. But he really pushed Pima County to get this stuff in place, and it actually happened in 2004 that it went statewide. So if you go in looking for a permit for gray water and they tell you, no, you can't do it, that is wrong. You can absolutely do that. There's a document online. It's called Using Gray Water at Home. It's from Arizona Department of Environmental Quality, and it outlines 13 best practices for using your gray water. And, you know, so it's completely legal. You just, you know, if you want to get a permit, go for it. Otherwise, follow the best practices and you're good to go.
You know, Greg, we live in a neighborhood of acre lots, all developed back in the 60s, horse property. And I can remember it was in the mid-90s, my neighbor came over and knocked on my door and said, can you believe I just got a ticket from the city because I was draining my washing machine into the oleanders?
Yeah. Wow.
And a lot of people, I know a lot of people would drain their clothes washing machine.
Of course.
And because that was a high water consumption, you didn't want to just empty it into your septic tank. So I know lots of people that were draining their washing machine in the oleanders.
Yeah, exactly.
Or backwashing their pool.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, a pool water is a different story it's got so many chemicals, high salts in it. But we call them laundry to landscape systems, and they're actually pretty simple to install as long as you have, you know, a way to get through the wall outside. You know, it's just
absolutely
a function of redirecting the water from the drain to, you know, to your outdoor space. And my friend Kari Spencer, she was on the show, I think, last month with us. She did a laundry to landscape at her micro farm project, and we installed it about, I don't know, 5 years ago, and we actually put in three different places. So you can move the pipe coming out of the back of your washer from pipe one, and it takes it to one part of your yard. You move it to pipe two, and it takes it to another part of your yard. You move it to pipe three, and it takes it to another part of your yard. So you're actually distributing the water where you need it.
And that's very cool. Do you have to go change valves manually, or is it all just evenly distributed?
Well, if you do what's called a branch drained system, it branches out and evenly distributes it, well, as evenly as it does, you know, going throughout throughout the pipes. The one that Brad Lancaster has in his place has the different pipes marked. So one goes to his peach tree, one goes to his citrus tree, and so then you have to move it every time you do a load of laundry. You move it to the next hole.
So I'm guessing that people that do that aren't dumping Clorox and bleach on their whites.
Thank you very much. Yes, you absolutely have to make sure that you know what you're putting in your laundry and really down the drain, because all of a sudden, away doesn't mean to some sewer plant or, you know, septic system somewhere else. It means that it's going in your yard. So you have to be really cognizant of what you put in your, you know, down your drain. There is a product I like to use called Oasis Biocompatible Soap. And the biocompatible means that it breaks down as fertilizer.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Now, I have made soap, and it is a lot of natural products. It's you've got to be careful with the lye. That can really mess your eyes up and irritate your skin. But, I mean, it's interesting that there's so many harsh chemicals. I'm making them like this. This is just all earth stuff you mix together and harden.
Yeah, exactly. So, and the thing you have to be concerned about or aware about in the desert is that you want to make sure that you don't put a lot of salts in your laundry or down your drain. So salt, there's a lot of sodium and that kind of stuff in laundry soaps and in soap. So you want to go with low sodium or low salt soaps.
We're online with Greg Peterson at 1-888-767-4348. If you have any questions relating to water harvesting, whether we're talking gray water harvesting right now, we're going to get into rain harvesting. You mentioned storm harvesting. What's the difference between rain harvesting and storm harvesting?
That's a really cool concept. So rainwater harvesting is any water that falls on your property. And the cool thing about rainwater harvesting is that for every 1,000 square feet, you get an inch of water, you get 600 gallons. So if you get an inch long rain and on 1,000 square feet, you're going to get 600 gallons of water. That's, you know, a fair amount of water.
And they've got Arizona broken up pretty good where you can look up and see how many average inches your county gets.
Yeah, exactly. And so stormwater harvesting is the water that runs by your house on the street. And my buddy, again, back to Brad Lancaster, he's the expert here in the state. What he has done is he put a concept of called curb cuts in place, where you actually cut your curb. You can get a permit for this in some places. And when the water runs by, the where the curb cut is at is a basin. And it's not an in and then another out basin. It's only one cut. So as the water's running by, the basin fills up. And when the basin gets full, the water just doesn't fill up anymore, and it just keeps running. So what he's doing is he is harvesting the water right off of the streets to water his street landscape.
Now, I have more questions about that. A lot of things run into my mind. Your asphalt, rubber, oil, gas, all these things coming together. What do you do with that water? But of everything we can do at Rosie on the House, we can't stop the clock. We're going to take our first quick break and be right back. If you'd like to join the conversation, 1-888-767-4348 or text to 411-923. It's Rosie on the House, your Saturday morning tradition for 29 years. What a beautiful Arizona Saturday morning, at least you're here in Flagstaff. I'm sure it's beautiful in Pinal and Maricopa until about 5:30.
About noon 30.
5:30 a.m.
Oh, yeah, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So this storm collection, water's running by, and it's coming down the street, and it's picking up oil and gas and rubber from tires. So what do you have to purify it? Is it a separate holding tank? Is it connected to your existing? What do you do with it?
No. So, so here's what I tell people. I get these kinds of questions all the time, especially when they say, you know, what about, you know, growing food in the city? It's polluted in the city. Well, it's polluted everywhere. So we just have to deal with what we have to deal with. And the what is done in the rainwater harvesting bases along the streets is we just put lots of mulch. We don't plant edibles along there. We plant desert trees. And, you know, the mulch kind of cleans it up a little bit, but we're not really doing anything to grow a lot of food in that space. Although, you know, a lot of the stuff gets bound up in the trees anyway. So if you want to grow mesquites along there and then eat the mesquite beans, you're going to be fine. But, you know, it's just what it is.
Now, Greg, when he does that, when he created this, is he just draining this storm water into a dry well, or is he storing it? Is he burying a tank?
Oh, no.
Okay.
And thanks for opening that door. That comes a little later in our conversation, but this is a perfect time to talk about it. And that's the difference between rainwater harvesting and rainwater storage, or even graywater harvesting and graywater storage. I am a big, big fan of not putting in tanks of any kind, especially with graywater. If you save graywater, it stinks really fast and turns black. So, you know, you don't want to be doing that. So what we want to do is we want to start designing our systems so that they water the parts of our yard that need the water.
You know, that makes it a very dynamic plan, because it's going to change. When we had all six kids home, our washing machine would flood a 50-acre rice paddy.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, now we do two loads a week and hardly keep a Palo Verde alive.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, and again, that's by design. And when we're designing these kinds of systems, we have to think about the whole system. And what you just mentioned is one of the things you have to, you know, if you have to, you have to think about. Like, what are you going to do long term if you have six people at home now, and in 5, 6, 7, 8 years, you're going to have two people at home or four people. You have to make adjustments for that.
And I know people that get very creative in their water utilization. They'll have 5-gallon buckets in the bathroom.
Yep.
That they'll fill up as they're waiting for the hot water to come. Then they transport those 5-gallon barrels to 5-gallon buckets to whatever area in the yard needs the water. I harvest approximately 500 gallons a year just with my air conditioning condensate.
Yeah, you know what? That it's amazing. Especially, I walked out the other day. I have an evap or a swamp cooler at the Urban Farm, which I absolutely love. And, you know, about this time of year, it tanks and doesn't work anymore. So I turned on the air conditioning, and, you know, the first couple of days that it was on, there was this steady stream of drips coming out of the condensation. And that's distilled water. That's great for your garden.
It is. And it's cool. My dog, it's all the water my dogs drink. They love it.
Oh, yeah.
They love it.
Yeah.
So there's a couple more creative ways of repurposing water that otherwise would either just be lost or sit down the drain waiting for the hot water to reach the tap.
There you go.
Now, I want to ask one question, and then we're going to get into just some pricing. I hear this, and I'm thinking through, and I'm just ching, 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 but that's not the case.
No.
We'll walk through that. But when you said you're not a fan of tanks for gray water, do you do any kind of storage for rainwater?
Rainwater, yeah. So that, in many things that we say in permaculture, or people ask me in permaculture, the answer is it depends. So my friend Barbara Rose has 26 acres in Marana.
Nice.
She's on a well, and, you know, sometimes her well dries up. So they've got rainwater harvesting tanks on every corner of their house, and she's using that metal roof, metal tanks, uses it as potable water. So for her, it's absolutely a necessity. For me at the Urban Farm, I put a $1,500, and that didn't include labor, I put a $1,500 rainwater harvesting tank in 2004. And the problem is that water is so cheap here in the valley. I mean, that's a funny thing to say, but it is. The water is so cheap that, my return on investment on that is like 30 years. I'm never going to get my money out of that tank. So, and we'll talk about ROI here in a little while. I have a rainwater harvesting system that's the rainwater harvesting system on the north side of the backyard. I have a rainwater harvesting system on the south side of the backyard. And it cost me $80 to install. Rather than $1,500. And it harvests the same amount of water. And it pushes the water out into my small orchard out in my backyard, about 30 feet out into the backyard.
Oh, boy, I'd like to hear more about that.
Okay, let's do it.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. Perfect opportunity to get online. We do have a couple in queue and an open line. Again, 1-888-767-4348 or text in to 411-923. I got a question here from a texter. What can a condo owner do? Well, I'm sure Greg's got some advice for you. Stay tuned. Before we continue our conversation on pricing for water harvesting systems, let's go run through a handful of texts we've received this morning. First one, as a condo owner, is there anything I can do for water harvesting?
Well, there's the shower thing, the shower bucket thing that Rosie mentioned earlier. You can always collect whatever water's running off of your roof. The thing you have to be careful with roof water, though, is what's your roof made of? If it's made out of asphalt, I wouldn't use it on any groceries. I wouldn't use it on your garden.
Back to your mesquites and your ironwoods. And
exactly.
Calivaries.
And your landscape. Yeah. Whatever you got growing in your landscape that you wouldn't eat.
Very good. And I think this person must have missed what we're talking about. They want to know about using the commode for gray water. That's
black water.
That's black water. We don't reharvest or repurpose any black water.
Well, we could go into composting toilets one of these days. There's actually, here's a quick one for you. There's a book out there called Humanure.
I'll leave it at that. Next there you question.
Go. Well, that's what they do in Milwaukee.
I know.
What's the
fertilizer? Milorganite.
What is it?
Milorganite.
Milorganite.
Yeah, something like that.
The Milwaukee Water Reclamation Department makes fertilizer.
Yeah.
And sells it all over the Midwest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We bought a bag once.
And worked. We'll leave it at that.
What about, and then somebody would know, is there anything they can do for pool water? We had hit that briefly when you're either backwashing the filter or the pool itself.
So there's multiple different kinds of pool water. There's salt, you know, they have salt water pools, which you don't want to use in your yard. Then, you know, there's the chlorine. But what happens over time in both these instances, you keep adding water and it keeps evaporating and it leaves the salts behind. So it becomes highly salty. You know, there's not a lot you can do with the pool water.
All right, now let's get back into pricing. How did you go from 1,500 on your first system to 80 on your second?
Perfect. So the tank is basically a 4-foot diameter culvert, like they go underneath the road. And so we bought a 7-foot length of or an 8-foot length of culvert and stood it up on its end, poured concrete in the bottom of it. And, you know, plumbed it through the ground underneath. And, you know, that's my rainwater harvesting tank. And that was cost about $1,500 about in 2004.
Metal prices probably a little higher now.
Yeah, exactly. So it probably cost you a little bit more. And again, that didn't we did a class at the Urban Farm in 2004. So the labor was free. Those tanks generally cost about $2,500.
You, Tom Sawyer, you.
I know. Well, here's the deal. I figured if I'm going to put something in at the Urban Farm, I might as well teach it and have people come in and help me do it. It's free labor, you know?
I love it.
So and then the rainwater harvesting tank on the south side of the Urban Farm, it's basically a scupper, runs the water down the side of the house and a pipe and runs it into a pipe about 30 feet out into the yard. So the cost on that one was the scupper, which was $35, and whatever the difference is in, you know, in black 3-inch piping. And the big thing you have to know about running water is you have to run it, and you probably know this, Rosie, it has to slope. The pipes have to slope. So 1/4 inch per foot so that the water runs. So when I was running, you know, when you're running it away from the house, you just need to make sure the pipe is sloping so the water runs away.
Now, Greg, is the end of that pipe, are you pivoting that where occasionally during a rain you're having to actually get out and move it, or do you manage that just at the distribution point allowing for different grades of drain canals?
Great. So you actually asked a couple of questions there. First of all, this is a great way to do it. You don't have to bury the pipe. And, you know, those swimming pool filter pipes you can put on the end of your scupper, the downspout, and you know you can put that wherever you want to in your yard. That's the simplest way to do it. What I did with this one that was $80, I actually buried the pipe, and the pipe goes into an underground air tank with no bottom in it. And this is a little bit of a hard concept for people to get, but what we want to do is we want to dump that water coming off of your roof or out of your gray water system into an underground space that's air. And the big reason to do that is because roots generally don't grow up in air.
Got it.
So if you dead end a pipe in a tank in the ground, again, it's when I say tank, it's basically a 5-gallon bucket or a 50-gallon bucket that we cut the bottom off of, so that the waterfalls, the rainwater or gray water, waterfalls into that space, drops 3 to 8 inches and onto the ground, and then immediately percolates in. It will never. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't like to say never, but it will never clog with roots.
Well, there's just one question in there.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing you now, as I'm getting to know you, the actual burying of the pipe, was that another learning moment for your students?
Well, yeah, actually.
I thought the same thing.
Actually, on that one,
Greg Peterson's mama didn't raise no fool.
I'll take it. And my mama is brilliant. So on that one, I actually had a volunteer that was working at the house. They call them woofers. The woofing program is an international program, generally stands for willing workers on organic farms. And for room and board, they work on the farm. So I've had woofers over the past 15 years at the urban farm, and a young lady came, and when I have these volunteers come in, I always ask them to do a signature product that a project that I can remember them by, and that was her project.
Nice.
Yeah.
She.
Free labor. Well, almost free labor.
Now, you had mentioned this is not on your dispersing.
Mm-hmm.
It's out in an air pocket. And uh-huh. This is kind of something you call harvesting versus directing.
Yeah. So, and we touched on that a little bit earlier, but for me, rainwater harvesting, and this took me a long time. I learned about rainwater harvesting in 91 in my permaculture design course. And I always thought rainwater, collecting rainwater, had to be held in something. Put it in a tank, store it for later. I call that water harvesting. I like to call water directing, where you actually design your landscape so that the water, when it's coming, goes to your landscape and waters what, you know, what you have to water.
Water directing.
Yeah.
Now, this takes a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And a lot of planning and
right.
a lot of design. Not to say that you couldn't retrofit it, but if you're starting from scratch, you've got a really good opportunity to make a smart design.
Yeah, and that's where you have to think whole system design. You have to think about your whole space. Stand back and look how everything's going to interact. And on water harvesting systems, and I love this quote by Art Ludwig. He wrote a book called Creating an Oasis with Gray Water. It is the book on gray water. And his quote out of his book is the one universally applicable principle for all water harvesting systems is there is no universally applicable principle. You can't, that's why water harvesting systems are hard to manufacture and sell, because each space is different. So you have to kind of stand back, look at your space, and see what's going to work in your space. And I highly suggest there's two books that are, if you want to do water harvesting, there's two books that are absolute must-haves, and that's Creating an Oasis with Gray Water by Art Ludwig and Rainwater Harvesting for Drylands and Beyond by Brad Lancaster. And those two books will teach you how to do rainwater and graywater harvesting systems at your house.
Very cool. And when you're looking at all of this and putting it together and your rain harvesting, I mean, this is still only one component. We go back to the two other types of water harvesting you
right.
mentioned, storm harvesting and graywater. This is just one component we're talking about.
Well, right. And when you're standing back and designing the system, you want to take in your condensate water, your evaporative water. You want to take into consideration your gray water and how can you get the gray water out into your yard? Because there's two ways to get gray water out into your yard. You can move the facilities out to the yard, like I did with the sink and the outdoor shower, or you can actually repipe your house, much more difficult. And I have one bathroom at my house that has been replumbed so that the bathroom sink goes out into the yard. Now, what I did underneath that bathroom sink is I put a Jandy valve. Those are one of those pool valves that, you know, it's basically a lever that you push it one direction. That's going to push the water down the drain out into the sewer system. You push the valve the other direction, that's going to push water out into your yard. So, you know, again, considerations for you know, rainwater and graywater harvesting.
Now, you're one of those lucky individuals that lives in a neighborhood that gets flood irrigation.
I am.
So how, I know this would probably be nearly impossible to track, but what percentage of water harvesting versus flood irrigation does the urban farm use?
Well, I have an outdoor shower. I have an outdoor kitchen. I have two different traditional rainwater harvesting systems in place. And then I have my bathroom that has been plumbed from inside to out. And, you know, it's hard to say, but those are the systems that I have in place. And, you know, if I could put in more, unfortunately, my laundry room is right in the middle of the house. So, you know, that's jackhammering up the floor.
That goes back to your return on investment. You'd never see that money back.
Exactly. You know, while we're on that topic, let's talk about that return on investment. And I really highly suggest that people take into consideration how much money they're investing into a system and what the payback is. Now, in the case of Barbara down in Tucson, you know, her return on investment has to be calculated with what happens when my well runs dry. it's highly unlikely that my well is going to run dry here in Phoenix. I mean, I'm, you know, if I turn on the tap one day and there's no water, we're all in trouble, right? So looking at your return on investment, it's a really, really simple calculation. Basically, what you do is you take the cost of the infrastructure. So in my case, it was the tank, which was $1,400. And water savings per year. I figured that rainwater harvesting tank would save me about $50 a year. So if we take and divide $50 into $1,400, it comes up with 28 years.
Hey, you said you've been in Arizona 50. There's a payoff.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. So, you know, when you're doing solar systems, when you're doing these kind of infrastructure things, you really want to look at that. And then that way you at least have a piece of data. And what I've heard is that a good return on investment for infrastructure like this is 9 years.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, not at all.
Especially when you calculate into the fact of all the water that's not being used. I mean, you multiply that by 100 people. You multiply that by 1,000 people. You multiply that by the population of Arizona. Mm-hmm. That's some serious water.
Mm-hmm.
So that chainsaw you hear in the background is here on site. You don't have to worry about someone outside your door in a mask.
Oh, that was bad.
They're kind of like Harley Davidson riders. They just like to sit there and throttle it.
Yeah.
And I don't. The chainsaw competition doesn't start for 2 hours still, and over there revving their engine. So don't worry. That sound is here. We'll do our best to keep it minimized and have a quality broadcast for you. It's the Outdoor Living Hour with Urban Farmer Greg Peterson, 1-888-767-4348. So pools have come up a couple times. We've got another texter here from Mr. Peterson, wants to know about, can they collect all this rainwater harvesting and dump it into their pool?
Absolutely. You bet they can.
And you were mentioning materials. If your roof is made out of asphalt shingles, are you going to get granulars into your pool? But no more than this is going to blow in when the monsoon hits.
There you go. You know what? It was windy last night. Like it was threatening to monsoon here.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
I hope it does more than threaten.
Yeah.
Now, I've had a vision as it relates to a big pool pond. Is a living pond.
Oh, you know,
I'm not a, I don't want a maintenance of a swimming pool. And
right.
I saw this concept of creating these living ponds you can swim in, and you've got to put certain plants in it that filter it and moving water. And as I keep planning it and thinking about it, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger because where it's going to go is between two mulberry trees at the edge of our lawn off of our front porch.
Oh, wow.
And I picture having the trampoline right there so you could bounce into the big pond.
Oh, my gosh.
A little outdoor cooking area with some misting systems.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking about pumping the water out of the pond for the mist system, and then it's just going to kind of cycle right back into it. And when we irrigate the arena, it'll pump out of this living pond.
Yep.
I even picture, you know how they teach you in survival classes, you can dig a hole and put a cup in the middle and put a plastic or a rock, and all the condensation will drip in there.
Uh-huh.
Having some kind of collector on the side of it to pull the moisture out to fuel this pond.
The only thing I wouldn't do is push it into a misting system, because the particulates will.
It's going to need a heck of a filter.
Yeah. Yeah.
It will need a heck of a filter.
This is where the return on investment comes in. You know, if it costs you $1,000 for a filter, or even $100 for a filter, it's cheaper than just hook it up to your. Your water from your house.
We're still probably in like the 5 years from breaking ground on this, but I'll talk to you further because we've got the house that we'll use for runoff to fuel it. We're going to have the runoff from the barns and the runoff from the workshop. So we're going to have three different rooftops.
Oh my gosh, yes.
Close to 5,000 square feet to be able to filter into this, although some of it may go into the pecan orchard instead. But.
Oh yeah, there you go. That's another good place for it.
It all has to do with saving the water, right?
Yep.
That's what
there
it boils down to. Jennifer and I, 2 years ago, committed we were going to save 10%. Now, when we moved into the house, mm-hmm. we eliminated half of our backyard, turned it into a sand volleyball court.
Oh, nice.
For the kids and everybody from the youth group. So we have half the grass we used to have, but we still have 2,000 square feet of grass.
Oh, yeah.
And we committed, we challenged, John Harper and I challenged each other, who could save 10% of what they had historically been using.
Mm-hmm.
This year, I didn't have my irrigation system turned on from about the first week of December
yep.
almost until May.
Yep.
And we're standing right now at about a 35% below
right.
year-to-year comparison against the year I had already saved 10%.
Yeah.
So much of it is just smart management of
right.
those irrigation systems.
Right. Well, and you know what? My grass at the urban farm gets water every 2 weeks. And
Gotta love that flood area.
Yeah, well, but here's the thing. People that water their grass, you know, 3, 4, 5 times a week, they're way overwatering it.
And in that irrigation system, I mean, you get a nice deep soaking that
that's true.
You can't get from a tradition from a sprinkler irrigated.
Right.
So
this time of year, I mean, my grass is a little crispy right now because it was 38 degrees last week or something like that. So, you know, you'd need to water it a little more often. But what I tell people about watering plants and watering grass is that just slowly start to cut back. And then watch the plants, watch the grass, and once they start to suffer a little bit, then you back it off. And, you know, if you're watering 5 times a week and then 4 times a week and then 3 times a week and then 2 times a week, oops, you know, that there's a problem now, then go back to 3 times a week. And
now, let me, we're running out of time here. Let's go through some of your resources real quick. I apologize. I didn't mean to cut you off. But
no, good.
I'm actually reading this email I got from you this morning about uh-huh. your fall 2017 permacultural design course.
Oh, you got that email. Yeah, so the permaculture design course is a 72-hour deep dive into permaculture. I like to call permaculture the art and science of working with nature. How do we learn the systems of nature and then install them in our space? And that's what I've done for 28 years at the urban farm. So that's the fall permaculture design course. It's 5 weekends. It starts at the end of September. It will change your life forever. And you can find out about, you can shoot me an email, greg@urbanfarm.org or growphx.com.
So when you say 5 weekends, this is a Saturday-Sunday commitment?
It's a Saturday-Sunday commitment, and you have to be there for all of them.
Okay. You can't just come in halfway. You got
right.
All or nothing. Now, you also had some additional resources. Let's recap. I know you mentioned a few of them earlier as it relates to book, but you've got a good list of resources here for water harvest.
Yeah. So first of all, if you want a free webinar on it, urbanfarmwater.com. If you go to urbanfarmwater.com, there you can sign up for a free webinar that I give, and you just watch it whenever you want. And that goes through a lot of the concepts that we talked about today, plus more. There are Arizona gray water regulations from the Arizona DEQ, and then Brad's website, harvestingrainwater.com.
And how does somebody get a hold of the urban farmer?
greg@urbanfarm.org or urbanfarm.org.
Well, we appreciate your time in studio with us this
Absolutely.
Saturday. Thank you. Coming up, it's the open hour line. Open questions for anything about your house, home, castle, or cabin. 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. Carol's standing by to take your call.
Keep Rosie on the House the number one referral directory in the state by voting at rosieonthehouse.com or ranking Arizona.